First, is feeling nostalgia good for us? It turns out the answer to that question might depend on the kind of nostalgia you experience. And our next guest says that in recent decades, a more harmful kind of nostalgia has been making a comeback. Stephanie Kuntz is a professor of family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She's the author of The Way We Never Were, American Families and the Nostalgia Trap. And she recently wrote about the idea of the nostalgia trap for the Harvard Business Review. Stephanie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you again.
Well, I think a lot of us think of nostalgia as a mostly harmless kind of pastime. And you write that sometimes it is. What kind of nostalgia is not such a big problem?
Well, you know, I think there's a huge difference between the kind of nostalgia most of us feel, which is really like the tendency to remember the best parts of an experience and want to recapture those or to recapture a feeling that we had with others. And that's something that can be very, very healthy. But there's another kind of nostalgia, and actually the word nostalgia comes from when this was much more prevalent in the world than it has been until recently. And that's the kind of nostalgia that wants to recapture, that first of all thinks that the good feelings were there all the time for everyone, or at least everyone in the in-group, and thinks that instead of making you feel warm the way healthy nostalgia does and recreate those feelings, not only sustaining old relationships but reaching out to new ones, the unhealthy kind of nostalgia is when you say, I don't want new ones and I've lost this connection to my old group or my old society or my old era, and somebody took it away from me. And that's the kind of nostalgia that leads to depression, it leads to hostility toward outsiders, and it helps produce conspiracy theories about who took this away from us.
So it would be phrased something like era X, whenever we want to say, was the good old days. Things worked well then. Something went wrong between then and now. That's kind of the basic idea.
Well, you know, let me be clear. There, as you said right at the beginning, there are some kinds of nostalgia that are healthy. I mean, personally, the kind of nostalgia that makes you want to reconnect with people, you want to recapture good feelings, you want to sustain good feelings, that's a great kind of nostalgia, particularly if you don't think that the entire time, you don't romanticize the bad times of them. But this idea is more than just looking back. I mean, I think there's a kind of good social nostalgia, too, that says, what are the best things in our past that we could build upon? The unhealthy kind comes when you think there was one period in which everybody was doing well, or my group was doing well, and it was doing well because there were no other groups involved. And since then, that golden egg has been taken away from us by outsiders, by invaders, by the deep state, by whatever it is you decide is the villain. And that's the kind of nostalgia that's kind of pathological. And, you know, back in the 17th and 18th and 19th century, that was very common among people. And, in fact, doctors were really, really worried about it. Then that receded as modernization went on and people said, oh, there are some things that are good about social change. We'll embrace those and we will not try to turn the clock back.
Are we seeing a rise of this negative nostalgia in recent years?
I think we are. I think we are. And, you know, a lot of people have talked about that. It's common. It was most common, I think, among conservatives until recently, but now you see it among liberals as well, you know. Liberals are saying, well, you know, there was a time when Democrats and Republicans liked Planned Parenthood, or there was a time when there was civil discord and bipartisanship. And that kind of nostalgia also rewrites some of the past. The fact that Planned Parenthood was often not available to blacks, black women or poor women. The fact that that bipartisanship led to all sorts of dangerous and unfair invasions of other countries. But you also see it a lot among conservatives who think, well, if we could just get back to 1950s families, to 1950s economy. Now, where I depart from some of the most common analyses of what's wrong with this nostalgia, and we can go into it because I'm a historian and I can tell you that the 50s was not all that it was not a Leave It to Beaver era for most families. But let me say just say that the other side of it is today the kind of nostalgia we're seeing is has been exacerbated on two sides. One, by the people who absolutely deny the problems that there were in the 50s and 60s and just say if we could get back to that, we would be fine. But I think it's also been exacerbated by the kind of modernists and some liberals and technological people are really, I think, at fault in this, who have denied the uneven nature of the progress that we've made and the fact that it has led to loss for some people. So somewhere in between, you have to be able to say, let's take the parts of nostalgia that say there are things we can build on from the past. They're not always what people say they are, but we can't go back to it. We shouldn't go back to it. There were too many things wrong with it that we wouldn't want to live there. But let's figure out how we can move forward in a way that recognizes the trade-offs and minimizes them.
Talking to Stephanie Kuntz, professor of family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, talking about nostalgia, good nostalgia, and what she sees as potentially bad nostalgia when we have kind of false impressions of what the past was and use that in a negative way today. Stephanie, we heard from Jace, who wrote on Facebook, I think the large amount of people who say the good old days are looking and concentrating on nostalgia and personal experience, not looking at the general whole. My grandparents' childhoods are going to be very different reality than the childhood of a person of color in that same era. So let's take that 1950s you mentioned and break it down with Jace's thoughts in mind.
Yeah, and I think that he gets absolutely the two-sidedness that I was talking about. There were some things in the 50s that I understand why many people are nostalgic for. For example, if you look at what was happening to working people in America, working class people without a college education, the gap between what they earned and college-educated people earned was much less than it was. There was not the same sense. There was real protection for working people. There were unions, there were regulations. It was harder for companies to outsource or to engage in financial speculation that rewards stockholders with the results of workers' productivity rather than increases in wage raises. They weren't able to outsource to other countries or to subcontract to people without unions or pensions. So there was a steady period from 1947 to 1979 when every generation of young men, and this includes black and Latino men, although they were way, way, way behind their white counterparts, was making economic progress and were earning more than their fathers had at the same age. So you can see why some people are nostalgic for this. Here's the problem. First, they're nostalgic for the wrong reasons. It wasn't because America excluded blacks and Latinos. In fact, we did better once we started letting those groups into the unions and expanding the leverage of working people. And it certainly wasn't because the families were so much better. I mean, family domestic violence was much higher in the 50s and 60s, in white families as well. You know, it was infanticide was much higher. If you were black or a woman, you were at the bottom of the line. You know, in legal rights, in blacks were the first fired. Women couldn't even take out a credit card in their own name. Domestic violence was not taken seriously. Rape was defined in every state of the union as forcible sexual intercourse with someone other than your wife, because a wife was expected to submit. So this was a period where if you were white, if you had a father who didn't abuse his legal and socially acceptable customs of beating up on his wife or on you. If your mother was really happy, as so many women were not, with her very limited options, then it seemed like a pretty good place, at least in comparison to the Depression and World War II. But boy, if you weren't, you had no options. Blacks and Hispanics, massive three-day race riots if they tried to move into better housing. All sorts of prejudices. Still lynchings going on. And if you were a woman who was abused, no such thing as a shelter for you. So it was one of those things where it's so easy to pick and choose the good parts and forget what was happening to the other people.
Stephanie Kuntz is with us, professor of family studies at Evergreen State College. We're talking about what she calls the nostalgia trap. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a time that you think of as the good old days in the United States? Or are you suspicious when people talk about the good old days, that something's being left out? Do you agree with our guests that nostalgia can cloud our view of history and our present-day conditions in turn? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Stephanie Kuntz about her recent piece in the Harvard Business Review about the benefits and drawbacks of nostalgia and her concerns about falling into what she calls the nostalgia trap. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see a time in American history as the good old days? Do you feel like your community, like the country, has changed in ways you don't like? Do you wish you could go back to those good old days, whatever and whenever they were? Or are you suspicious when people start talking about the good old days? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to our callers. Stacy is with us in Oak Creek. Stacy, hi.
Hi, I really like that your historian and your speaker pointed this out. I've often thought the way she is thinking. If the days were so good, Betty Friedan would never have written The Feminine Mystique. And we can't just cherry pick. And so I really appreciate her point of view and that she's sharing it. So thank you.
Stacy, thanks a lot for the call. Stephanie, Stacy used the phrase cherry pick, and that's part of what you're worried about. It sounds like that we pick out the very best things that we remember and just leave out all the rest of the stuff.
Exactly. And you know, I don't want to put anybody down for having good memories. You know, when I first started talking about this, you know, you'd get calls from people who said, my family was great. And I'd say, okay, but, you know, what did you know about the families in the black neighborhood or the white poor neighborhood? And, you know, and I understand some nostalgia, you know. One of my favorite memories as a kid is when my mother walked down to the library in a rage because this very mean librarian had refused to let me check out this book of Mice and Men, for heaven's sakes, you know, but it had swear words in it. And she said, you know, the librarian had berated me for trying to take this out. My mother marched in like a little banty hen and said, you let my child check out anything she wants to. I trust her implicitly. Well, by the time my son was a teenager, I was not willing to walk into any video store and say, you let him check out anything he wants. So, you know, I can understand that kind of nostalgia, but it's just like your caller said, it's cherry picking because it's the same period in which women had really no recourse. You know, there were only 8 states. People talk about how great it was when there were homemaker wives. There were only 8 states in the union where a wife who stayed home, had put her husband through school, supported all of his job, had any claim on the income that he earned outside the job. The only way she could get it was if she could prove that he'd been at fault and had wronged her. So if she couldn't prove adultery that she had not participated in, you had to come to court in those days, quote, with clean hands, or that he had abused her but that she'd never fought back, she got nothing out of it. So that was the other side of these good memories.
Stacey, thanks for that call. Stephanie, how does it, before we go back to our callers, how does it hurt us today if we get the past wrong, if we fall into this nostalgia trap? Okay, maybe we get the 1950s wrong. Does that affect us in the 20-teens?
I think that it affects us tremendously. And one of the reasons it affects us tremendously is because there are some bad things going on today. Since 1980, every generation of young men aged 25 to 30 has earned less in real dollars than their fathers did at the same age. And that's particularly true of whites. Whites still earn more than blacks and Hispanics, considerably more, and they have much more wealth. But they've been experienced losses that I understand, you know, and mostly we judge ourselves by our trajectory. So they're feeling upset about that. There's much more inequality in this society, economic inequality, not as much, quite as much racial inequality, and not certainly not as much gender inequality. But there is much more economic wealth inequality than there was when in the 60s and 70s, every expansion, the bottom 90% got the majority of the benefits of the income growth, whereas today it's the top 10% and 1% who do. So there are real things that people have to worry about. But if you start thinking the way to change those is to go back to the 1950s and forget about what the differences were, for example, the fact that women were excluded from the workforce, and even more importantly, the fact that there were so many things that are exactly the opposite of what the Make America Great Agains are telling us. We had more government subsidies of families, more investment in jobs, more protections for unions, more regulations of banks. So even when you deny the real progress we've made, and we've made tremendous progress since the 1950s. There's less poverty now. Elders were so much more likely to be poor in the 50s and 60s than they are today. But even when you actually look at the problems we have today, we're going to get the solutions wrong if we try to solve those problems by rolling back the clock.
Talking to Stephanie Kutz from Evergreen State University, Evergreen State College in Washington. Back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Minocqua. Mike, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I just was wondering what your guest thinks of nostalgia therapy in people with cognitive problems, cognitive loss.
Mike, thanks for the call. Stephanie, we've talked about that on the show where people with dementia often benefit from nostalgia, but that's more the personal stuff you were talking about earlier. It might be the music or the sports or things like that that they remember. You have no problems with that, I think.
Well, no, of course not. And of course not, you're not going to take my mom had Alzheimer's, and I know how important it was and calming to her to think about the good times in her life. But precisely because she had dementia and precisely because we could not go back, we didn't have to remind her of the bad things. You know, the time that her father, who was often a wonderful father, was drinking too much and mom kicked him out of the home. So we could remind her just of the good things, and that calmed her down, and it was a great thing. But that's very different from thinking that, you know, making it a political program to take us back to an era that already has cherry-picked memories.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. We heard on Facebook from Ted, although I was not alive yet, based on TV shows of the times, the late 1950s and early 60s get my vote for the good old days. Can you talk about how TV shows were representing the 1950s and 60s to people at the time, maybe not even matching the reality then?
Not at all. I mean, Leave It to Beaver was just not a documentary. You know, it's kind of interesting if you look at those TV shows. You should also look, of course, at the news with the riots, the dogs sicked upon children, and demonstrators in the South. But if you look at the comedy TV shows, they weren't the way things really were. They were extended advertisements for a new consumer economy in which the age of marriage, after all of the hardships of the war and the postponements of having babies during the war and the hardships of the Depression, New families were forming at a tremendous rate. The age of marriage for women was less than 21. The GI Bill was giving benefits to 40% of young men so that they could actually afford to start families. And so there was this real interest in starting families, and the new expanding consumer economy started to really romanticize those families. And in some ways, these sitcoms were extended advertisements for, if you'll buy this house, if you'll buy this refrigerator, you too can have a family where mom and dad will never fight the way that, you know, actually they were fighting in many families, even as these TV shows were going on. Certainly the way that people were fighting depression, big increase in divorce rates immediately following the war when these early marriages fell apart. And so it's like, you know, the beer ads that say, if you drink this beer, the Swedish bikini team will come hang out at your place. They were saying, buy this refrigerator. Ozzie and Harriet always schmoozed in front of Hot Point appliances. The kids were never shown drinking things that weren't for sale in the ads. And essentially they were aspirational. They were not documentaries. They were not realistic. And my mother once described to me watching them and thinking, oh, gosh, you know, wow, I never knew you could have that kind of a freezer. Oh, my goodness, this is a washing machine. That would save me a lot of work, you know. But she didn't have any of those things. And it became associated in her mind that if she had that kind of family, if she built that kind of family life, she should get those sort of things. The flip side of the coin, and this is really important if you didn't live through the time to know, is that so many kids, and I've taken oral histories, hundreds of them over the years, would watch those shows and think, what's wrong with my family, my
and
mom?
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Stephanie Kuntz from Evergreen State College in Washington, author of The Way We Never Were, American Families and the Nostalgia Trap.